Recording live from the Hoban Law Group here in Denver, Colorado, I'm your host, Eric Singular. Welcome to the Hoban Minute. Today we are having on a guest that we haven't talked to since, I think, last March when the pandemic started.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll call this episode for right now, The Greatest Story Never Told. This is the story of all the things that are going on in cannabis, and who better to touch base on this with than the cannabis renaissance man, Mr. Tim Gordon. Tim, thank you for being here with us this afternoon.
Eric, thank you, my friend. It's great to be here with you guys. I always enjoy talking with you, and especially right now as we're ending the year and get to talk cannabis right up my alley. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and it does seem, by and large, this being a year that probably won't be remembered too fondly, but a year that we've seen a lot of progress just overall in the cannabis industry. And that's true both here in the U.S. with recent legislation that's moved forward and what we saw in the election, and the greater global cannabis industry as well. So, I mean, it is kind of a good time as we end the year off here to just take a moment to be appreciative for the progress we did see this year in the backdrop of course, a year that, you know, it's going to be kind of marred by the memory of the pandemic.
Yeah. You know, it is a unique scene of circumstance for the cannabis industry in the midst of this global pandemic to be where we are now and to have made the strides like you're talking about. It's pretty interesting to think about it. You know, the amount of time that we've put in and then the leap forward the cannabis industry makes in that short amount of time. So it's it wouldn't say it's pandemic proof or anything like that. But we've had really unique things happen in the cannabis space, both in marijuana and hemp, that are really pivotal for what's going to happen in 2021 and beyond.
Yeah. Well, when we caught up with you last time, we were in an interesting spot because we were coming out of the stay-at-home order. We were right at that cusp of early spring, which is in this country when a lot of our farmers, the backbone of America and how we all eat, are deciding and getting ready and preparing the land for getting their crops in. And we were talking about, like, how is this going to impact what we're going to see as far as industrial hemp production in 2020? And in the last couple of months, we've seen the number crunching guys out there look at the licensed acreage and what acreage was planted this year. And we did see a decrease from 2019 to 2020. But let's talk a little bit about just what you saw this year. Mm-hmm. I know you operate multiple hemp farms. You're a big part of that agriculture sector of hemp. What was your impression this year?
Yeah, well, I mean, this is part of the dynamic shift of cannabis, the evolution that's even happened, like we talked about, in the midst of the pandemic. And it's really interesting. Well, what we're seeing, like you mentioned, is the rise of hemp, but the diminish in acreage, kind of the evolutionary change of the CBD green rush being encompassed by the true potentials of the plant, everything else, not just that single molecule, the fiber opportunities, the grain opportunities, and all the biomass and subsequent opportunities that come just from those two swim lanes. So I think what we're seeing is really a unique shift where you'll see CBD even more over time be focused more towards specific brands and not just the opportunity to make money. And you'll see the evolution where the grain sector and the fiber sector really start to take off and serve a world purpose as far as food and as far as many other textiles, biofuels, et cetera. So seeing it right now, it's like the infancy. It's like the beginning of the shift.
Totally. And I know this year, you know, we farmers had a lot to deal with. The market unsteadiness is one aspect, but then you also have this issue of just Mother Nature, and the lack of crop insurance right now around hemp. And I know there are some hemp crop insurance options, but not to the same degree that we have for other agricultural commodities. And I know we got an early snowstorm here in Colorado. Can you speak a little bit to how either like one of your farms was affected, or just people that you know? And you get a phone call in early September. It's like, dude, this just took out my farm. And I'm like, what am I going to do with all this investment that I had?
Those calls are hard to take and to talk through and to listen to, because like you said, there's folks who have put it all on the line for for counting on this return. And although Mother Nature and all her grace and beauty is something that we all cherish to be like, at times she can be wicked in her own way. And sometimes those things happen. We saw it this year on one of my farms, where we had that early snow like you talked about, and it really played into our crop. We lost estimate around 40% of total harvestable volume just due to that. And there's other folks who lost everything. And like we talked about, the financial cost there is already sunken. And having no opportunity to subsequently sell your crop is even worse. And it's not just here. It's across anywhere from southern to northern California, across the west, with the multiple fires that have gone on and the inundation of smoke and all of the bioaccumulants that come with huge wildfires that can, land on our plants, end up causing some kind of issue where the crop loses monetary value. So Mother Nature is just always tough to deal with in agriculture. And because of the uniqueness of the cannabis plant, she can play a fury on what potential revenues look like when she hits.
I had kind of hadn't even factored the fires into that. And that would have taken out just thousands and thousands of acres.
Yeah.
Tim, we know we associate you so much with functional remedies, and we can talk a little bit about kind of the history around your involvement and your building of that company. But I know you're also involved in so many other things as well. And so I'd like to just make sure that we kind of highlight and cover just some of the things that you're doing that are really exciting to you. We've seen your involvement with a number of organizations, both on the hemp side and the marijuana side. Mm-hmm. And I know you do a lot of policy work. You are often in Washington, kind of helping educate policymakers and our nation's leaders and leaders at regulatory agencies on how the heck to treat this plant, what is sensible policy. But I know you also sit on boards for interesting companies like Impillo Biosciences. So just give us a little bit of what makes you so excited about all the cool things you got going on.
Yeah. Well, over the years, I've always tried to find that answer, and it always comes back to the plant and how this plant works for me, how I've been, it's just part of me. And I don't try to do anything else about, exploiting it. I just want to hang out with it and learn more constantly with this plant. And that's really what is driving me to, even at Functional Remedies, for us to create our new brand Synchronicity, is looking at the plant and going to the next level of what that means and how Synchronicity really works, outside of cannabis and just in us, in a synchronistic world, the flow, the balance, the homeostasis. And you mentioned Impillo Bioscience, and that's part of that with me. So, when I start a plant's journey, I start it inside the soil first and creating that synchronistic effect, the flow there. And that's what Impillo Bio, that's what I got attracted to these guys, is they're doing unique things that no other biological or fertilization company is doing. They're truly looking at the plant and saying, hey, what's cool about you that makes all this other stuff extenuate? So they're looking at the cannabis microbiome, believe it or not. Cannabis has a microbiome just like our gut, which is like the second brain. And if you think about that, that's really the start of the whole synchronistic process, is those special bacteria that make the plant work optimally. And that plant works optimally, and you create a product that works optimally. And that product works optimally inside of me, inside of you, inside of Halston. That's synchronicity. That's flow. So that's what Impillo, that's the exciting thing about Impillo. That's what they bring to my brain, and that's what they bring to cannabis, is that unique adaptation to the cannabis rhizosphere to make it, close your eyes, your mind eye, and just think of the coral reef and think of the beauty of the coral reef. Think of the color. Think of the life around that. That's what Impillo can bring. That's what we're trying to create, is that coral reef for cannabis. And that's part of that whole part of the synchronistic process. So they're pretty cool, man. Pretty cool group of kids.
Dang. That was like mind-blowing level stuff right there, Tim. Need a moment to just kind of absorb that. It calls back actually to a time when I was watching you on stage. I think it was in Nashville, and you were talking about how many chromosomes we as human beings share with the cannabis plant, and just this idea that, you know, you talk about this kind of like next level engagement with the cannabis plant, or just this next level understanding. We haven't gotten there, but it does, I feel your excitement around getting this new understanding and new ways to, you know, probably better consume the plant and better incorporate the plant into our everyday lives.
Yeah. I'm trying to, I've been working on this now for a while, and I've been touching it on it with a couple of guys on my farms who are growers. And all I can think about it is called the beyond. And it's just that unique connection that makes cannabis cultivators, good ones, the really good ones, is not because they can create the dankest weed or the best high CBD, but they have a connection with the plant that exuberates into a product. And that's real. Like I said, that synchronistic flow between the plant and us, this relationship is only between cannabis and man. Like you said, we share too much unique adaptations and too much unique processes that, you know, this is part of us, and it's been part of us since the beginning. So it's time to go to the beyond with this plant, to think about it not just as a wellness plant, but as to the beyond. And I want to take people there.
I feel like you just took me there. And that is the greatest story never told. Just this idea, too, that I think a lot of people are unaware of, is just that we co-adapted, you know, with this plant. And I think it's easy, you know, we think about that with other crops and other resources, and even thinking about like corn, and like looking at like corn that they find like back in the day, like old corn that Native American tribes were growing.
Yeah.
But it's so seldom talked about because of, you know, the stigma and everything else, that we adapted with this plant. I mean, maybe even more than corn.
Oh, absolutely. You know? We have. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, since the plant's eruption out of the, you know, the Asian highlands and through Africa and then into our, it's totally adaptation, and it's not like anything else. That's the thing. You know, there's not a plant that can touch us and further. There's nothing else. There's nothing else. We don't have this with corn. We don't have an endocannabinoid system where we can share a phytocannabinoid and enhance our own endocannabinoid system, produce anadamide. There's nothing else that can do that than this plant. And that's it. That's, you know, like I said, time to go to the beyond.
Well, and I'm interested too, because as somebody who, you know, touches so many different aspects of the business and also works with so many businesses and organizations like yourself, it's important to keep that kind of thinking and that kind of connection to the plant as the industry grows and as it becomes more commoditized. And it does seem to be like this kind of this battle for like preserving some of the almost like the very sacred parts of the plant, and whether that's kind of more from a shamanistic perspective or just these ideas around how we're connected with the plant, with this industry that's coming, that's just backed by, you know, hardcore capitalism to turn this thing into a commodity.
Yeah. So into a big machine. Yeah.
It's cool to, you know, to talk to someone like you and know that there are people kind of fighting to find that balance, I think, with both, you know, because we can't stop it from happening.
That's exactly right. You know, the train's left the station way behind here, and there's no way it's stopping at this point. So there has to be that unique balance, right? That's what the plant wants, right? Homeostasis, that whole thing with cannabinoids that we all talk about. So it doesn't matter if it's within us or if it's the plant and money. There's going to be a balance there, and we just have to find that, and it has to be appropriate. I think of the large amounts of money that are coming into cannabis are probably going to market and are probably going to open new dispensaries or new shops that are where people need it. And that could be part of that synchronistic flow, that balance, where, yes, there's going to be a shit ton of money and a lot of corporate capitalism, but there's also going to be a lot more access and then a lot more regulatory process, a lot more understanding, and that legalization process and regulatory process will soon, you know, be a national thing.
You know, you're the second person today that I've heard say what the plant wants. And I think that's, it's such a cool idea because it's not how we normally talk about things.
Yeah.
Like we always talk about things as far as what we want as right. human beings
yeah.
and just kind of the, you know, those who will just bend anything to their will. And this idea of, but what does the plant want? Mm-hmm. It's just like, it's, that's like a revolutionary idea for anything that's ever entered, you know, a commercial market, is having that awareness
yeah.
around this plant. That's just, it is different.
Yeah,
and,
definitely.
You know, I hope to main, I hope it, you know, is maintained. Awesome conversation. Let's just touch on one thing before we wrap it up, which is, you know, there's a lot of people out there, and I don't know exactly, it's a little weird transitioning from everything we were just talking about to this, but you know, we've tried to put cannabis in these lanes, and mm-hmm. that's necessary to do from a legal perspective, from a policy perspective, but it's creating interesting challenges, and it creates challenges for farmers. It creates challenges for processors, business owners, all across the supply chain. And that's, you know, setting this 0.3% standard. You have so many people in the hemp industry mm-hmm. who are, you know, in favor of raising mm-hmm. that to 1%.
Sure.
And then you also have legislation like the MORE Act passing the House. And mm-hmm. so on the one hand, you have folks over here in the hemp industry who are kind of demanding a higher percentage allowance of THC. And you have the federal government probably considering federal legalization more than they ever have before.
Yeah.
Like, what's going to happen, Tim? Are we going to see, is it, what's going to come first in your yeah. mind, and what's like, and what the heck's going to happen when we finally get to the place that we should have been at a long time ago, which is it's cannabis. It's all cannabis. It should all be legal. Let's go.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think what we're doing is we're creating steps to that, what I call end use regulation, right? In the cannabis plant, it doesn't matter the swim lane. It's regulated based on its end use. So I think we're taking the steps to get there. Getting hemp pushed through in 2014 and then subsequently 2018 and now then building upon that to go to 1%. Number one, there's a bunch of advantages with 1% for farmers economically, et cetera, for increased value of their crop. There's opportunity in that 1% for farmers to also be exploratory. To consider, you know, new opportunities in genetics that you really can't because of this nominal 0.3% number, and it really is, it has no solid backing that for a 0.3% or the 0.2% or whatever it's been across the globe over the years. So I think, you know, being progressive and thinking 1% is another stairway to end use regulation, and I think if you know, in the stairway to heaven up here, you know, being cannabis legalization across the country, you know, taking steps every year, every 12, 18 months is considerably fast moving. So if we can, you know, push the message of 1%, now do I think it's going to happen with Senator Rand Paul's initiative? I don't know. It might be too early. But the important thing is the message is there and it's being heard and it's being pushed out. So there's going to be more opportunity for that. So as long as we keep taking the step up to end use regulations, I'm going to push it 100%.
Yeah. Is there anything that's on the horizon for you that you just want to make sure we're aware of? If anybody really enjoys this conversation, where can they catch some more Tim Gordon, man, some more greatest story over here?
Yeah. They can always find me on social media and stuff like that. But yeah, you know, I'm doing amazing things over at Functional and helping out some companies in California and across the globe negotiate the whole cannabis world. So, you know, you can find me globetrotting, talking cannabis, my friend.
That was an awesome conversation, Tim, and yeah. Really important kind of ideas to share.
Yeah, thanks,
really,
man.
Really appreciate you coming in, man.
I love being here with you guys.
Yeah. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Hoban Minute. Do you have any ideas for episode topics or guests? We would like to hear from you. Reach out to us at media@hoban.law and stay tuned for more on the Hoban Minute.